Welcome back to the second hour together with Josh Reeves. We are talking about the Secret Rite Volume 2 and some of the other material, of course, that you can find on his website, theglobalreality.com. We have much more to talk about, much more to address when it comes to some of these both misconceptions and also ideas when it comes to the roots of the conspiracy culture and everything else. I'd like to spend a little time on the Illuminati and the basic idea that we have of the Jesuit connection as well. And the obviously you brought out this point about the Alumbrados. Tell us a little bit about this society and who's behind this and the connection to the Illuminati, Josh.
Well, you had this group appear in Spain that seemed to be operating on some ancient knowledge, and they were seeking to essentially find and teach and learn about this thing called the inner light, or what we know as enlightenment. And so what was interesting about that group is that's where we saw Saint Ignatius of Loyola, who went on to form the Jesuits, was involved with this group, and the foundations for the Jesuit order seemed to be really rooted in these Alumbrados teachings. And this is where men were being taught that this power that the quote-unquote gods had also existed within every man, so long as we were able to access it through these ancient teachings and these various things that in some cases went back to ancient Kabbalism, went back to ancient things from the roots of culture from Sumeria and Akkadia and Babylon, the rest of this stuff. And this seems to be one of the key factors of illuminated teachings that were disseminated throughout various secret society structures. And so when Weishaupt had created his what he called the Illuminati in 1776, it was really not the same as what the Alumbrados had. It was more of an attempt to take these teachings in a watered-down fashion and add illuminated or enlightened degrees to the already existing Freemasonic structure. And that's indeed what they did. And so it's just fascinating that St. Ignatius of Loyola, being the really one of the figureheads of bringing out this Alumbrados information and then forming the Jesuit order and that becoming the sort of a military enforcement army, it really speaks volumes, Henry, to the fact that that Alumbrados structure transferred over to the Jesuits and this secrecy was involved. They want these teachings to be in the hands of a small amount of people, the priests. And of course, this is how it was in the olden times, the days of Sumeria and the older civilizations. We didn't have congressmen and senators and lords and all this stuff. It was the priests, and these priests that had the information kept it restricted and kept it kind of watered down and only allowed certain bits to be put out to the general public. I mean, it's just like in Egypt. They told the slaves the sun was God. Meanwhile, they had their whole pantheon of gods that within the highest levels. And I think that's a theme for the entire religious structure to this day. And that has been men who have had access to information that they have not allowed the general public to have and have restricted in a large dose in order to control society and control the world in the way that they see fit. Because again, if everyone had access to this secret information, you would have no need for a hierarchy, would you? You'd have no need for control. There would be no one to rule over because everyone ostensibly would be equal. And I think that's a very, very, very common theme that we see happen throughout the centuries, is that it always seems that people in general are being relegated to ignorance and being only told parts of the story, only enough to what they feel that they need to know in order to gain control over them.
That's right. I'd like to ask you what you make of, allegedly Adam Weishaupt was Jesuit taught. I don't know if he was specifically became a Jesuit or how deep involved he was in that. That's definitely absolutely there. But then if we look at some of the activities of the order, the Perfectibilists, We had a lot of royalty joining, of course, so some you know, prominent names, yes, like Ferdinand of Brunswick. There's a number of people in there, but it was also it was built on some of the Enlightenment principles, allegedly, and also incorporated into this was then the destabilization of certain monarchy and the current ruling class at the time. And as far as I've been able to tell, that there's nothing that seems to indicate, at least officially, of course, that they were like, Satan worshippers or anything like that. This is was a political movement. There's so much misconception, of course, about the Illuminati. And granted, I understand that there's an official version and then, of course, an unofficial version as well. But if we just focus a little bit first on the Jesuit aspect here, how influential was this to Weishaupt, and how much of that did he carry with him, do you think?
Well, it seems that from what I've read and what I've researched, that Weishaupt was essentially charged with going and finding the rest of the information that the Templars had when they fled to Scotland to form and later form Freemasonry after the Catholic Church had forbidden the Templars to practice anymore, and they had all that stuff, heresy trials and all that. It seems that Weishaupt was sort of the guy who was sent in to find the rest of the information, and so that it would give the Jesuits more power. And with being the person that was going and finding that, he was sort of the messenger of it and the carrier of that information. And so because he had access to that knowledge that very few other people had access to, other than the highest up people in the Jesuit order at that time, that he then transferred the information to, that put Weishaupt in the position to have a lot, possibly a lot of power, because he was one of the few people who knew these deeper teachings and these deeper stuff that went back to Solomon's Temple and things of that nature. And so, yes, it put him very much in a position. You're absolutely right. It wasn't about Satan worship or any of this stuff, but what it was about creating a new faction and a new order of individuals. And you're right, it very well could have been a case where it could have been possibly had the intention of being started as something good. There's this overarching theme throughout history where, power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think that that's the case with Weishaupt, where, I think he was trying to set up his own little shop and his own little power structure because of the heaviness of the information that he had in his possession. And so, I think some of these groups went underground and went on and splintered off and to form other groups. And certainly the secret society structure that came to America, that existed in all the universities and was set up on all the universities like Yale, definitely came as a result of the Weishaupt thing. So I think that the intent and purpose behind all that splintering was to water down these original teachings and to still keep the teachings and the fact of, man actually having the inherent power of the gods inside of him, if we only had the knowledge to tap into it, was something they wanted to keep from the general public at large, and also in the hands of a smaller amount of people that may have an opportunity to be able to challenge at that time what may have been perceived as power that was unwanted, like you mentioned, the crown or any of these other power structures. So
right,
absolutely. Right. I think that's been really a big, big key for these people, is keeping any and all of this information or these enlightened teachings out of the hands of people who may challenge them.
That's true. If you look at the climate in Europe at the time as well, I definitely understand much in the same way that there is reason for groups like the Tea Party that props up, or even Jordan Birch, society in the States at the time. I think we need to look at it a little bit from the same point of view here, because the Illuminati at that time, then they had reasons to form, politically speaking, the shitty conditions in Europe, and they wanted to, I think, also then control dissent against the royalty that started to grow in Europe. So I think the rationale was, okay, let's create a group, potentially, is one of the theories, let's create a group that can represent an anti kind of royal approach, and at the same time then attract certain people from royalty itself, and use their power to advance the agenda of the group, of course. But this is a way, again, to create or to control the opposition in one sense, if it's true that the Illuminati really was the creation of the monarchy, and they were seeking to continue their own reign, possibly. This is, again, there's two different sides to this story, of course. I don't know which one you favor, if any of these, Josh, but just that's an interesting point, I think, that there is a reason politically for why this was created at the time, but the question is, was it controlled opposition, or was it kind of the real deal, I guess? What do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's absolutely an argument that needs to be made, because I don't know for sure, Henrik. I really can't say, but I mean, it'd be hard for any of us to say for sure. But I think absolutely what you're saying is true. There is a precedent for the fact that, yes, they wanted to have groups that were a challenge to the crown, or the challenge to other power structures, but they also wanted to make sure that those groups were controllable and didn't become a threat to their power structure itself as well. And absolutely, I think that's very much the case in the modern structure with the John Birch Society and the Truth Movement and the rest of this stuff, because you hear people say that they don't believe in left-right politics, or they don't believe in the left-right paradigm, but yet they'll say, go and vote for, Ron Paul, or go and vote for this right-winger and go and support this. So, you can kind of see that thing where, okay, well, it's which one is it? Do you either not believe in left-right politics, or do you want people to support the system? And I think that's been the problem, is that people have been confused and been duped by people who were saying they don't believe in the current political spectrum, but saying, okay, well, in this case, disregard that and go vote and go support this right wing. I think if that causes this thing where, regardless of whether or not you go into a ballot box and write Donald Duck's name in on the ballot, you're still verifying to the power structure that their system as it stands is okay with you. You just don't like the people that are running it. Yeah. And I think that sets up a very scary thing, especially with these CMP types, with the Christian Reconstructionists and the people who want to bring in this theocracy and a religious rule throughout the globe. And that is indeed what these people want to do.
It's definitely true. What do you see as the fix, I guess, to that? There is a lot of people out there who are like, as you say, they vote for certain people because they see it that it's the best of the choices, although they might not prefer, who they are and so forth. And some to certain people seem like a very good option. But what do you suggest instead? Non-compliance? How do we can begin to unplug people from the system, from the matrix in a way, Josh?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a hard question to answer.
Yeah,
it's very inducive to the individual themselves. I don't think there's one bulletproof way for each individual to say, this is how you unplug each person from the matrix. I think that everybody, there's so many issues that everybody out there can resonate with at least one of these issues. And I've talked to so many people through the years, Henrik, and every person I've talked to has had a different story about how they got into this. Some people got into this stuff through UFOs. Some people got into this stuff through 9/11, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so to me, it really doesn't matter how you come into it, so long as you are, not getting caught up in some of these divide and conquer schemes that are being laid for you. But I really suggest to people, what I suggest is, non-compliance in the system, not voting at all, not registering vote, and really trying to not participate in their systems at large and getting that to spread. And there are many people that are doing that now. And I think that that's the biggest signal that you can send these people, is that, look, I'm not buying into either one of your phony paradigms now. And I think that's why they have so many different factions within the different parties now, so they can ensure that no matter what, they get the people voting for somebody and participating in this system all over again, so that the vicious cycle just continues and never ends.
That's right. It's really interesting in that sense, how people have been played and the willingness of people to go along with it. It's very much a perception, manipulation of the perception, that this is all the options that we do have, and in that sense, people are not empowered to do things on their own, but they're constantly again, going back to the Occupy movement, they are, in one sense, Josh, they're looking towards the people that initially have created the problem to offer them a fix, because it's nothing really clear or tangible in one sense of what's demanded or proposed And furthermore, if you looking towards the people that have created the problem to begin with, and look towards them for the solution, I think you kind of lost the plot in a way. It's like it doesn't make sense to me at all. So, you know, very sad.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's one of the biggest things to try and overcome is it the fact that we've been so used to having everybody do our thinking for us, and I run into that problem a lot with. People who listen to my show and stuff like that sometimes not for the most part, but sometimes I run into this situation where people don't want to do the research and do the homework on their own. They want you to give them all the information there is, and they don't want to have to do the work on their own. And I think that's so dangerous to participate in, because then you're putting your knowledge and what you know in the hands of someone else. And to me, that's what got us in this problem to begin with. So we definitely need more people. That's, as I mentioned in the last hour, that's why I try to get people to look into the information I've talked about in the Seawright Volume 1 and Volume 2 for themselves, and to expound on that information and to research each of the individual names and the different groups, because I'm telling you, there's more to this story than I've been able to put in any of these films, and you're doing yourself a huge disservice if you don't research all of this stuff on your own. And I think that's the most important thing, Henrik, is taking back and reclaiming for ourselves our own personal knowledge, and again, not putting it into the hands of a teacher or a figurehead or something else. And that sort of system is what they've gotten us accustomed to and used to. And I think a lot of people just fall into that inadvertently without thinking about it, because it's just so natural, because that's the way things have been up to this point. And so, I mean, that's really what I stress with my listeners and the people who watch my films, is to please, please, please always do your own research.
Well, it's true. It's very true. I think, and then another side effect you get of this is that people develop, kind of hero characters, I guess, and then another set of consequences to this is that if you then, let's say, or the person that is being getting the projection of all this hero stuff onto them, in one sense, if they don't go into a certain aspect, or if they've forgot to mention an area, that they're accused of intentionally misleading and things like that. Why didn't you tell me all the things about this or that? When it's like, well, I mean, if we've encouraged you to do your own research and look into this, for yourself, this is what should be done. But it's almost like it turns on its head pretty quickly as well. And the people who are looking to a figurehead or a hero in that sense, kind of can equally, snap against them in the next second as well. It's a very weird situation, all of this.
Yeah, it is. It's a difficult thing because, and that's just it's a product of the society and how we were always programmed to believe that the hero is going to come riding in on the white steed to save us all. That's a big problem, I think, in the United States and with the truth movement stuff with Ron Paul. I think that everybody is, instead of trying to take actions and do things to reclaim their freedom for themselves, they've now pasted and subjected all those hopes onto Ron Paul, who they think is the hero now. And people feel like, we just have to support him and get him elected, and then that'll take care of all the issues we have. And that's just not the truth. No person is going to fix any of these problems, and especially not someone who's an elected official within the system itself. It's just a pipe dream to believe that would ever happen.
Yeah, well, exactly. Especially a precedent. I mean, how much do they really know anyway? It's been speculated within the conspiracy movement for a long time that the precedent is just a patsy anyway, and it's not actually the controlling force behind something. It's committees, it's board, it's business, corporations, and everything else. So what is this all about all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case in that. And so, people who, as you mentioned, say, well, this person left out this, or you left out this piece of information, or whatever it may be. That reliance on another individual other than ourselves to be the proprietor of our personal truth and our personal knowledge base is just dangerous business. And that's the business that we have as humankind allow ourselves to be in, where we're constantly allowing a third party to dictate to us how much we know. And I think it's time that every single individual out there takes the responsibility of what they know and their own knowledge base into their own hands.
Let's shift area a little bit, and I want to ask you a little bit more about Khashoggi, some of the connections that you brought out in your film pertaining to that really interesting area. Who's this guy, Josh?
Adnan Khashoggi actually is a very, very interesting character, and he supposedly has been connected to every major world event over the past 50 years, and you definitely see his hands in everything from black ops and assassinations to funding. He's really a bag man, so to speak. He's sort of a go-between between big financiers, Zionist financiers, such as Carla Kahn and others. And essentially, when the powers that be are going to pull off an operation like Iran-Contra or a 9/11 or anything else, they have to find ways to be able to fund these things and do these things off the books. So they set up front companies. They set up various organizations that appear to be, you know, either selling products or doing something else. And then they have these ideologies around them where they say, okay, you know, you want to look good, or you want to extend your life, or, you know, you want to, you know, have this miracle cream or this miracle product and to, you know, fight the New World Order or whatever it may be. And then the next thing you know, all this funding is being funneled through these products and then into other sources, which then goes to fund. Well, one of the things that Adnan Khashoggi allegedly did was provide all the money to the hijackers for 9/11, the alleged hijackers. And he had set up this elaborate product, you know, magic product, magic creams, magic, all this stuff. And it's very interesting that we see that same model in sort of the truth movement, patriot movement type of radio networks and stuff out there to this day. And Adnan Khashoggi 100% created that. But this guy he runs in a lot of circles with movie stars and musicians. Specifically, he's very obsessed with rock stars and musicians. And the rock band Queen actually wrote a song called Khashoggi's Ship about a party they had on his ship. And I started finding all these connections to these various groups that were operating out of Minnesota, in the Minneapolis, Minnesota, the same area where the Genesis Communications Radio Network operates out of. And all of a sudden, all these groups with, you know, Genesis Intermedia, Genesis this and that start popping up. And I'd already known that Khashoggi had connections with Iran-Contra. And so when I started seeing, well, you know, like we talked about in the Secret Volume 1, we had Pat Buchanan, Jesuit trained, who was involved with the Council on Inter-American Security with Larry Pratt of Gun Owners America. They were funneling money between the Contras in South America and the CIA and the cocaine trade. And so to find this connection to Khashoggi with those two individuals, Pat Buchanan, who, of course, Alex Jones worked on his campaign in 1996. He's been a regular guest on the Alex Jones show, as well as Larry Pratt. And then to see Khashoggi having all these connections to all these front companies with the name Genesis in them, I started seeing red flags. And then, of course, to find the connection with Michael Aquino that we talk about in the second part of the film, and Michael Aquino's involvement in mind control operations, psychological operations, which is huge, huge bombshell information. And that people all see that in the film. I don't want to give too much of it away. But essentially, Khashoggi has been providing financing for covert operations that have been conducted by the CIA, the Pentagon, the Israeli Mossad. He's been doing this stuff for years and years and years. If people go and Google his name, it's, I'm trying to remember how you spell it, Adnan Khashoggi is how you spell his name, Adnan Khashoggi. People can go and research that and look up him on his own. I find it highly interesting that Khashoggi had financed through his Genesis Intermedia group. People try to say, "Oh, well, there's no connection to the, you know, Genesis Intermedia and Khashoggi and the real Alex Jones GCN." Well, that's just absolutely false, because Khashoggi had funded this guy John Gray, who of course wrote the book "Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus," and had claimed that Khashoggi had ripped him off. But also admitted that he had funded this the book that he had written. Well, Khashoggi had gotten this $250 million injection for Genesis Intermedia from the Jewish financier Carl Icahn, And this was the money that he provided to John Gray to finish his book. John Gray also went on to be a prominent 9/11 truther, appearing on the Alex Jones Show, and also gave money to Barry Zwicker to fund his first 9/11 film, which actually was the first film made on 9/11. And later he ended up being an Alex Jones guest as well. So we started to see all of these various connections to Cash Yogi, to the 9/11 truth movement. And then really one of the bigger ones to me was the fact that we had a connection directly to the 9/11 commission itself with Keene and Cash Yogi providing money to Keene and the whole 9/11 commission thing. I mean, it's just an absolutely unbelievable tangled mess.
Yeah.
That when you actually go through and start looking into, you start to see, oh my goodness, they set up this entire conspiracy 9/11 thing as a front to get everybody looking over here and looking over these different, you know, factions and groups and arguing over it. But yet the real power and the real people behind it go on untouched, unimpeded. And this has been a theme for these people going back to the Kennedy assassination.
And even before that, as we mentioned before, this is seems to be the MO in that sense. This is a standard procedure. Unfortunately, it's a mess, as you said. But you have some incredibly interesting connections, obviously, that you detail in the film, and we relay people further to that to find out more about that. What briefly can we talk a little bit about the potential Zionist connection here as well? We have different groups or different interests. We have political agendas. We have theological agendas going on. We've talked a little bit about the Jesuits, the Knights of Malta, and the Vatican, kind of that connection. We do have a Zionist faction in there involved in everything like this as well. It doesn't necessarily mean that Carly Cotton is a Zionist just because he's Jewish. But what's your take on the Zionist faction in all of this as well, Josh?
Well, I think from my research, from what it's shown me, is that Zionism is an extension of this priest class structure, and that's what they use to basically further their overarching agenda to implant the people that they want in those biblical lands. It's definitely it's definitely there, especially within the Council for National Policy. We have lots of self-proclaimed Zionists within that group, and people who are constantly professing their allegiance to Israel and the whole thing. But I think it was very interesting to see that Cash Yogi has been involved with so many people that have had these Zionist ideologies. But I think that I think, again, that's part of this thing where, you know, you execute a plan or something like 9/11, you know, you blame it on Arabs and the group that you're against over here, and then it furthers whatever ideology that you're behind. So, yes, in some cases, that ideology for some people is Zionism, for some people it isn't. You have, like we mentioned earlier, you have some people over here that are Freemasons, some people over here that are Jesuits. But I think the biggest key thing is that all of these groups, no matter what their name is or who they are all colluding together at the highest levels to bring about these operations. And so I think that's why it's important to focus on all of them. And that's why, you know, if I see someone that has a Zionist connection or something, I point that out. If I see somebody that has a Jesuit connection or whatnot, I point that out, because it does show that there is no separation really within these groups. They're all working towards the same interests.
Yeah, that's right. And you do have the Christian right in the States, other countries as well, of course, and they have unquestioned support for Israel. We have a very strong Israeli lobby in the United States, and even historically, we had some really interesting interviews lately about the relationship between both the creation, of course, of Jesus, the Messiah figure, obviously, how this has served a political agenda of Rome, but also involved in this, of course, we have an agenda of Judaism, and the fact that there's been a struggle, a force here between both the sides to fight each other, both from Rome and both from the other side. And again, it can be questioned down the road ad infinitum if these groups now have they joined up? Is there still a battle between them ongoing? No doubt, though, there is a relationship and there is a dance, if you will, that's going on between these groups. And I think that most people today might look at it very just with modern goggles, if I can put it that way. But the fact is that this has very, very ancient roots, as you've been pointing out as well, Josh. And that's one of the most important things. If we want to understand what's happening today, we need to look back into the history and just realize this concept that it's an old game plan that still is it's ongoing. And this is one of the reasons why we're seeing the ramping up for a conflict with Iran today, why they're, you know, going into to Syria almost now as well. This is just it's continuing. The plan is unfolding. That's what I say, Josh. How about you?
Well, absolutely. And it is unfolding. And I think that in the modern day, we have so many newer examples now of how these groups who in the past had been, you know, opposing each other, such as the Catholic Church and Freemasonry. And now we're seeing stuff coming out. Well, there was an article that came out a few months ago and a big scandal where now they're allowing Freemasons to be involved in the Catholic Church and be archbishops and the rest of this stuff. So that really shows a transitional shift. But you know, I mean, again, you know, we've had, you know, be it Freemasonry or Judaism, or all this stuff was absorbed into the Catholic Church so long ago that, you know, the time in which these things were sort of different factions possibly working against each other has kind of gone in the background. Mm-hmm. And some of the newer initiates and the people that are coming into the secret society groups or the Freemasons or whatever else in the modern day, they don't have any context for a time in which these groups were separate and working for different goals. So now if someone gets involved in the Freemasons, they may have a knowledge of the history of it being against the Catholic Church and those being opposing forces, not even knowing that in the modern day, a lot of those divisions and factions have, in fact, gone away in exchange for cooperation and working towards mutual interests.
Yep. That's absolutely right. Very good point. Why don't we begin shift over a little bit and talk about obviously where you're kind of heading towards the end of the DVD and some of the areas where you're leading into next. So are you planning a volume 3 or what's happening next here, Josh?
No, I don't know. It's just going to depend on where the information goes. So people kind of ask me if I would make a volume 3 because there's a lot of stuff that I left out in volume 2 and maybe I'll do that eventually. I just don't know yet, but I really am trying to focus on for the next film, but it's kind of up in the air just because we don't have a budget and all that stuff for the next film yet. But I'm really trying to focus on the next film into some of these ancient and buried societies and civilizations that I'm finding now are all over. I'm sure they're all over the world, but specifically here in the United States where I live. And one that I've came in fascination with about 7 or 8 years ago was this thing called the Rock Wall, the ancient Rock Wall in a town called Rockwall, Texas, not far from where I grew up my whole life. We find a very, very interesting thing there. This was uncovered about 150 years ago when they built this town and they found these 2.5-ton garnet stones that had hieroglyphic type writings on them. They found giant skeletons near this thing. It's a 20-mile wall buried under, 30 foot of mud and dirt. You have to dig about 30 or 40 feet down to the bedrock to find this thing. You know, what's interesting is that they found blue shale deposits above the top of the wall, meaning this thing had been built before the Pleistocene era. They found shark's teeth embedded in the outside of this thing. There's been paleomagnetic surveys that have been done where the people who have found information on this wall have not wanted their findings to be put out there until after their death. We have things such as the wall being a masonry wall that is held together with something called a geopolymer, where multiple different types of crystals have been brought together and used to create this wall. And some of the estimates that have been done on the age of this have gone anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000, 500,000 years old, 50 million years old. And so there's a lot of stuff that surrounding that, a lot more stuff that I'm finding in my research. In fact, I found another what appears to be another wall that was reported by the New York Times in the 1920s, about 150 miles from Rockwall. I'm planning to go get down there at some point. That they said was actually thicker than the Great Wall of China. Nothing has been reported on that in about 60 years. But there's a lot of things that tie in with the secret rite at the end of the film, because Congressman Ralph Hall, who's a Council for National Policy member, was actually seen in the middle of the night leaving the old Rockwall courthouse with one of these big garnet stones. And as soon as people in the town of Rockwall started asking questions about this, you know, why does this, and by the way, Ralph Hall absolutely is a Freemason. I do have that confirmed. And it's interesting because the lodge that he's belonged to, if you go to this East Fork Masonic Lodge in Rockwall, Texas, if you go to their website, they actually have a little representation of the wall at the top of the website, you know, indicating that, yes, they are aware that these were some ancient stonemasons, some of their ancient brethren who built this, even though the scientific community says, oh, it's a natural formation, but we've never found another one like it anywhere on Earth. So it's highly interesting, and his office being on top of one of these ancient temple rooms that they've identified, reports are coming out of the Rockwall newspaper in the latter part of the 19th century about, you know, again, giant skeletons being found. Those there are pictures of those giant skeletons that were found around there. They went to universities and then disappeared. There's just all kinds of evidence and stuff that's leaning towards this possibly being the ancient and mysterious land of Aslan that was created by Quetzalcoatl. There's been all kinds of reports of, well, people like channelers, like Ashiana Dean, have said that it was a storehouse for ancient alien technology after the fall of Atlantis. There's just so many things, and I've just become intrigued with it over the past 7 or 8 years, and I've met with a lot of the people who have done digs in the past on this thing, and I'm trying to create a film to get up interest in this rock wall so that possibly we can fund another archaeology dig in the future to try and come up with some information and some artifacts on this thing, because Henry Kamenich, it appears that there is ancient history that brings into question everything we've been told by science and religion and everything else just being buried and forgotten about intentionally underneath us everywhere. And I just really feel compelled to try and bring that out as best I can.
Well, that's right. I mean, the work of Michael Cremo, some other people as well, Forbidden Archaeology, the OOP arts, the out-of-place artifacts, fascinating stuff. And I mean, the United States is, in some cases, not the place you think about when you think about, you know, massive monuments and things. And of course, we know that there's a tradition Native Americans in America, but possibly we have this, as you mentioned before, the giant connection, if you will, to the United States, and there's some incredibly interesting stuff. There's even another website, for instance, a while back stumbled over, called ancientcanalbuilders.com, that shows these amazing structures all over the the United States in terms of huge canals showing old port cities today underwater, and it shows how someone has done a massive effort to kind of terraform the specifically the east coast of the United States, but there's just so much more in the U.S. Is it? Have you heard of anything similar in Texas, or let's say that if you were to extend your search for this a little bit, is it something otherwise close by that you've heard as well that we can talk a little bit about?
Oh, absolutely. There's actually a Phoenician fortress and a furnace that's been found in Oklahoma, which is a state just north of where I'm at. It's about an hour and a half drive. Actually, it's about an hour from here. And there was a researcher who had found this. The Phoenicians allegedly came into the United States many years ago through waterways, and there's actually a tribe of Indians up in Oklahoma who are the only tribe of Native Americans who actually have their own written language. And this written language appears to be a form of the phonetic alphabet. And so we're now starting to see these structures as in this Phoenician fortress / furnace, where you see these stones that are comprised of cells. They have like a 4-panel square with stones in the middle of them, and then they're stacked up one on top of each other. So this has been referred to as a furnace and a fortress. Oftentimes, when they refer to furnaces in ancient texts, like the fiery furnace, we know that oftentimes they're talking about stargates. So I've been totally intrigued by that, and that's only about an hour and 20-minute drive from where I'm at. So I definitely want to go out and try to get some footage of that. I do have actually some pictures. There was an archaeologist who went out and had actually discovered this, and he brought some stones to show us, and I got some pictures and stuff of that. I hope to go out and see more of that. Also, places like Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, which supposedly you could reach deeper parts of 20 or 30 years ago that they've now shut off, which allegedly have entrances into inner Earth and the rest of this stuff. So that's what I'm looking at now. I'm kind of seeing a tie-in, a possible tie-in with some of these ancient structures within the United States. Then the reason they're being buried is because it's a possibility they may contain caverns and different things like that that may go into the Earth itself. So I'm definitely going to do my best if funding permits and we get the support that we need to be able to get that film out and to go explore this stuff. It's going to be a different type of film than what I've made before because it's going to consist of actual footage and things like that, not news clips and stuff of that nature. So I'm really trying to push the boundaries, Hendrick, as far as looking both at the political structure and the secret society structure of these things, but also, the things that are being intently buried and not allowed to be brought to the forefront because they contain some information that, again, challenges the power structure. And I think that's the point of all of this, really.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what's so really interesting about all this, that this is might be where things are heading. There has been a kind of a reluctancy from certain portions as well of the alternative community that it's kind of okay for a while. You can look and talk about UFOs, but really we know that it's kind of bullshit. And if for whatever reason we would like to criticize you for anything, we could always just say that, hey, you know, you're looking at UFOs, buddy. So, you know, you're kind of disqualified already right there. There's certain things that seem to be kind of off limit as well. But what you've been pointing at, which is very interesting, is that there is a kind of an ongoing, if you will, cover-up attempt almost in that sense. No, don't look at that. That's not okay. But look over here. Look at all this stuff, right? So
it does seem that way. It does. I mean, everywhere I turn it, I mean, I can remember like some of these subjects, not looking into some of these subjects in the past. Because I had listened to people who said, oh, you know, don't look into the Sumerian stuff or don't look into any of this, you know, secret society because it's a distraction. Focus on bankers and all the rest of this. And you start to come to find out, oh, wait a minute. When you see these connections to, people in the truth movement and in alternative media to the Knights of Malta or the Jesuits or whatever it may be, it starts to paint this picture where you say, okay, well, this is exactly why they never wanted me to look into this. Because they're afraid I'm going to find out this whole other end of connections that there are. And there is so much more to this picture and this worldview of the conspiracy than what the alternative media has been allowed to let out up to this point. And I think that's what's great about Red Ice Radio is that, regardless of whether or not you agree or disagree with all the guests and stuff that come on the show, I think that you have an opportunity here to get access to so many more viewpoints than you do on a lot of the other outlets there. And I think that's why people need to continue to support what you're doing here, Hendrick, is because there's very few outlets that allow every single viewpoint pretty much to be put out there. And I think that's what's great about what you do here is you allow that to happen. And so I thank you for that.
Well, same to you. I mean, you allow that to happen as well. And that's why we like to go all over the place and an effort to try to find the answers and because I personally believe as well that there is a bigger story here. There is a great mystery of mankind, but it seems to much of this is we're being entrapped again in a certain set of accepted beliefs, basically that this is okay to look at, but not this area. And I couldn't care less. I mean, we talked about this a little bit last time we had you on as well. But it's like that doesn't really matter to me. It doesn't matter. I'm not here to get recognition either from the mainstream, which seems to be the case in some cases when it comes to even alternative media, that they're trying their best and hardest to try to. Like the pinnacle point is still if you can make it onto CNN or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, well, I don't give a crap about that. This is about just finding the answers, letting the answers lead us where it may, or the information lead us where it may. Josh,
absolutely. I mean, I just never have understood that myself either. Is why are we trying to be against the mainstream, trying to placate ourselves and what we talk about, what we do to the mainstream? Obviously. The mainstream of whether it may be media outlets or books or movies or whatever else has obviously proven itself to be a faction and a control arm of the power structure itself. So that to me is why there was a necessity and a need for a quote unquote alternative media to come up with. But as you said, unfortunately, a lot of those people just as a comfort zone thing, have fallen back into this same. I'd be honest with you, Henrik. I see lately more fear and paranoia and just frankly bullshit from the alternative media, almost more than you see from the mainstream media these days. I mean, it's absolutely mind blowing to me to see how much fear mongering and scaremongering is going on within the alternative media and doom saying and the rest of this stuff. And look, you're never going to be able to think rationally or act rationally in a situation to save your life if you are acting on the basis of fear. You're just going to be a mess. You're going to be flying all over the place. And I think that's what inherently happens to a lot of people when they first wake up to this information is they're flying off the handle. They want to know whose ass they got to kick. Who do they have to go after to stop this? Because they're just operating on an emotional basis. But when you allow your rational mind to come in and you start looking at and actually having some discernment about this stuff, you start to realize that some of the things that you were made to be in fear about are the fear itself is distracting you from being focused on things that you may actually have the ability to change. And I think that's been a very, very distinct operation is to keep us from actually engaging in actually changing things. They keep us paralyzed with fear and paranoia. And that's a very dangerous thing.
Well, it's a kind of a double standard in many cases in all this as well. I don't want to downplay something specifically that I don't have all the facts about. But if we look at some of the situations pertaining to the Gulf oil spill, for instance, or even Fukushima, I'm not saying that things aren't bad, but I'm saying that it has been an incredibly hysterical, in some cases, reaction to some of these things, like we are all going to die kind of thing, you know, and it's all over right now. We're still here. And again, I'm not saying that things are great there and don't worry about it kind of thing, but I see what you're saying there. It's a hysteria involving around that. And in some cases, this can come from people who are, you know, can have an approach that all this, you know, nonsense about 2012 and doomsday, that's all garbage. But let's focus on this that's happening right here. That's our doomsday. It's within the same kind of paradigm, if you know what I mean, and hence a double standard to me, Josh.
I couldn't agree with you more, Henrik. I'm so glad you said that. I mean, I run into that so many times during my radio show and during my research, and it's so hard to get across to people the idea that, yes, you know, I am concerned or you're concerned about this event or that event, Fukushima or the oil spill. And yes, we are concerned. And yes, you know, those things need to be exposed. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there just becomes all of this. I mean, I can't believe all the stuff that I heard. I've heard everything possible about both of those events. And I know you have as well, Henrik. I mean, I've heard everything from, you know, aliens caused the oil spill in the Gulf to, you know, Israeli Mossad submarines launched missiles at Fukushima. I mean, there's just this constant thing of paranoia and fear and minimizing our power and our energy and our ability to be able to effectively try and disseminate the facts from the fiction. And I think that that's exactly what they do by keeping people in this frozen state of fear is they keep that mind frozen, and then you're not allowing people to actually discern for themselves what's going on. And both the alternative media and the mainstream media have done a fantastic job of that as of late.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I remember even hearing a while back that the whole Gulf was going to explode. They were drilling into some kind of batholith point there, and there was going to the whole freaking thing was just going to blow up, you know. But it preys on the audience in a sense, and it keeps on coming back for more. In that fear state, there is actually an addiction as well, with pertaining to the adrenaline that's produced when you listen to it. There's a lot more to it than that, and I'm not saying in every aspect this is a detailed plan, but that's certainly one of the side effects in all this.
Well, it is, and that's exactly what, you know, it is like a drug. You know, people get addicted to the fight or flight, you know, sort of thing that initiates in all of us, and then people learn to manipulate that. You know, the fact of the matter is that a rational person who is operating on all the best facts that they can come up with is going to be much more effective than someone who's running around like a chicken with their head cut off, scared and saying the sky is falling. And yeah, again, true. You know, that's, I think that is the ultimate point in all this, Henrik, is They don't want us to be researchers and people who are finding the truth on our own and finding it unfiltered. They want to make sure there are all these gatekeepers and all these things there that will muddy the water for you. So they're certainly not making it easy on the researcher, but folks, you know, nothing in life is ever easy. But my thing is that all my years of doing this, I've been on air for almost 5 years now, and my life has changed 100% since I started actually looking at things on my own and researching on my own and finding my own truth and not just following what other people have said to me. And yeah, it's been tough. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, having to come to grips with people that you thought were heroes and understand that they're not your heroes and not on your side. That's a very tough thing. And
but a very healthy thing deal with that as well. It's very healthy.
It's very healthy because, you know, then you start to realize, then you start to realize that, okay, they pull one over on me. I fell into this trap again, but I'm not going to allow that to happen. It's okay to admit that you've been duped. It's okay to admit that you bought into, this truther's information or this researcher's information. It's okay. Nobody's going to look down on you or think bad about you because you bought a lie. I bought a lie too. We all have at some point. But the real fact of the matter is, are you going to move on from that? Are you going to continue to push forward your own knowledge and your own enlightenment and try to do the best to share that with other people as well? And I think for me, Henrik, that's become a real focus of all my work.
Absolutely. I mean, this is about continuing the search in that sense, and don't expect to have the whole picture yet, and have some humility in the attitude towards both the information, but also in the way we present or claim to have all the answers or all the truth, and just keep more of an open mind and just share what we have, obviously, and don't hold anything back in that sense, but don't claim that this is the ultimate truth and this is what everyone else should think as well, because that's horrible.
I don't have all the answers and nobody out there does, but I think the most important thing is that if all of us individually are focusing on our own part in this and our own work in this, that collectively we can gain a lot of insight and gain a lot of ground by just being our own individuals and continuing to push and look into this stuff. I mean, I think that that's exactly what they don't want. They want us in factions because we're easily controlled. They want us in groups. They want us in categories. And I think when you have a bunch of sovereign individuals out there who are just interested in the information or not inclining themselves towards this group or that group or anything else, I think that's a much more dangerous proposition to the power structure, because then you're not relegated to some fringe or some area where you're more easily controlled.
That's right. We'll tread easy forward, see what happens, feet on the ground and head in the sky, as I say. Excellent to talk to you again, Josh. Always good to have you on again. Great job on the DVD. And I once more want to mention the website, theglobalreality.com. Head on over there. Take a look at the options that Josh has for you in terms of the DVDs. I highly recommend that you take a look at it and then determine for yourself what you think and what to make of all the information presented. Josh, you also have a radio show, of course, going that people can tune into. You have all the other information on the site as well. But if there's something else you'd like to mention, I'll leave the last couple of minutes here open for you, if so, Josh.
Well, thanks, Eric. I appreciate that. And theglobalreality.com is my website. It's theglobalreality.com. And up there, yeah, people find all kinds of stuff. We have a book section up there that has some audiobooks that are taken from readings I've done from stuff like William Branley's The Gods of Eden and some various other books. We've got all my other documentary films and stuff up there. But yeah, under the Buy SR2 tab is where people go and get the DVDs and Blu-rays of The Sea Riot Volume 2. And if there's people out there that want to be contributors financially to some of the next projects and next films, these all require money, and I don't have any outside source funding other than the people that listen and enjoy my work. So that's where they can support my work as well, at the website, Henrik. And again, I just appreciate Red Ice Radio. I appreciate what you do, and this format of being able to come up here and have an open conversation about all of this stuff is very vitally important. So I hope people continue to support your work and what you do, Henrik. And again, just thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and great. Have a blast for your next project, of course. Sounds like a lot of fun, and good luck on the Rockwall project. Sounds great.
Thank you.
Much more coming your way soon. Keep an eye on the website for all the latest. Thank you for listening and thank you for subscribing. This is Henrik. Have a great day wherever you are and take good care.